call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, April 2nd, 2014. The time is 5:31 p.m. Senators present on the committee today, Senator McGuire, Senator Michiki, Senator French, Senator Fairclough, and Senator Bishop are both called away to a Finance Committee meeting. I expect Senator Dyson will be along shortly. So today we have our recording secretary, Ann Kreckelberg, faithfully here. Claire Gross will be handling the LIO sound system, and of course the call in public testimony, and my staff, Ms. Williams, is here. First bill up today is HB 161, Auctions for Big Game Harvest Permits. Last week we heard from the bill sponsor, the Department of Fish and Game, and we took invited testimony. Today we're going to take public testimony, but first, in working with the sponsor, I would like to bring forward a committee substitute for HB 161. Senator McGuire, do you have a motion?
I do, Madam Chair. I move the committee adopt the committee substitute for House Bill number 161, version 28-LS0530/I as our work draft.
Thank you. Is there objection? Seeing none, the work draft is before us, version I, India. My staff has come forward, and Lindsay will take us through the changes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Lindsay Williams, staff to Senator Giesel and the Senate Resources Committee. The work draft before you makes three changes. The first change is found on page one, following line eight. One doll sheep was removed from section one and inserted into section two. So going to page two in section two, line two now reads three harvest permits per year for doll sheep. It previously read two harvest permits. The second change is found on line 23, page two. Prior to the word person, the words notwithstanding any other provision of law A was removed and capital A was reinserted. And the final change that the committee substitute makes is on page 2, line 30. Following the word with, conditions set by the commissioner was removed, and applicable law was reinserted. And Madam Chair, that summarizes the changes.
Great. Thank you very much. All right. So I'm going to have Representative Gaddis come forward. She contributed significantly to these to the CS. I'd like to have her remarks on the committee substitute, please. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lynn Gaddis, I represent District 9 in the Greater Wasilla. Had to think there for a minute because we're in the process of changing district numbers, so I apologize. I'm going to have my staff speak to the exact reasons and why we worked with the reasons for the CS, and then I'll follow up if you'd like, Madam Chair.
That sounds great. Welcome.
Thank you, Senator, for the record. My name is Reed Harris, staff to Representative Lynn Gaddis. Three changes, as were mentioned by your staff member. We moved the sheep permit from Section 1 to Section 2 of the bill. There were a lot of reasons for doing this. The main one is it now is eligible for Pittman-Robertson match funds, which would hopefully give some more money towards the department to use for conservation protection education needs. Section 2, when the language that stated notwithstanding any other provisions of law, that's legal language that says this bill would supersede any other provisions that were in statutes regarding this. This puts it, or the removal of that means the other statutes would apply before this bill. There was concern that there would be, this would create an environment where you could have special hunts, close hunts, out-of-season hunts, or possibly the use of helicopters. We had lots of different hunting groups come forward about this and say this is upsetting. So it was changed because of that. Same thing with conditions set by the commissioner being removed and applicable laws reinserted. It's just to ensure that. I will note on the record it's been said by the department in both these both resource committees, House and Senate side, that they had no intention of doing that, so that was not the intent of the bill, the language that was changed. But now that we're back to the original bill, it could not happen either way.
Very good. Questions for the sponsor or her staff? Yes, Senator Dyson.
Yeah. My question is not about the changes, but the underlying bill.
Please, sure, go ahead.
There was some discussion about whether how much should all of the money raised go to the nonprofits that are, you know, a great asset to the hunting and so on and so forth, and whether it should all go there or a portion of it go to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game for their efforts. And so I'd enjoy the sponsor's thoughts on that.
And so I'm sure that I understood the question. Are you saying that, are you asking whether 100% should have gone to the department or the 30%? I'm not clear on the question.
The underlying question, should a percentage have gone to the department, you know, whatever that, instead of most of it going, all of it going to the nonprofits?
I'm going to let my staff follow up on that because I still am not quite there, because there are two sections that address different, and I believe that you're addressing section one. But
And I'm sure I'm behind the power curve on this.
No problem. That's why we're here.
Be patient with my ignorance.
Vice versa. Thank you.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, to confirm, you're speaking to section one of the bill where 100% of the tag proceed goes to the nonprofit. Correct. There's two different theories on that. The nonprofits that are able to use these tags, and I will also know with the removal of the sheep, it leaves section one of the bill exactly as it is in statute already. The thought is, and possibly the Devil's Thumb Archers are online to speak about this, they have been big utilizers of the Edelin Island elk tags, that they can do a lot with that, the 100%. They don't get to keep any of it, though. I mean, they have to spend it in a manner according to the department, so they really keep 0%. Section 2 of the bill, the language change, which upped the percentage from 10% to 30%, does the same thing. In statute, as it's written, they could keep that 10% and use it for anything they wanted, as long as it wasn't essentially for political gain.
They being?
The nonprofit organizations could keep that 10%. As long as it wasn't used for political gain, lobbying, things like that. Now they retain 30%, but they get to retain 0% of those profits, the proceeds from the auction. They have to spend it all, according to the department, on projects within the state of Alaska. They do get to keep a nominal fee for basically conducting the auction. I'm sure there's some groups in the building or online who could speak to how much that is. It's not been a lot, though.
And I don't care. And it's fine for the recovery. But I've seen some figures that these are pretty significant funds that have been raised, over 100K on some of them. Do you have any of those kind of, give us a ballpark idea of the monies that are raised selling these permits?
Sure. In your bill packet there, we actually have a breakdown. The numbers came from Fish and Game just for the last couple of years since 2000.
That's probably what I've saw before, yeah.
Exactly. 2009 through now, I mean, the one that jumps out at you when you look at it is in 2013, Wild Sheep Foundation sold adult sheep permit for $180,000. The first sheep permit sold under the governor's license program sold for $200,000. I'd say, an average is right around $50,000, $60,000 looking at the sheep permits, though.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions for the sponsor or her staff? Great. Well, we'll open up public testimony now. Thank you very much, Representative Gaddis. So we have several testifiers online. So I'm going to start with the LIOs, the folks that are calling in. Sheet on top is Fairbanks, so we'll start in Fairbanks. Wayne Heimer is there, and so is Karen Gordon. So we'll start with Wayne. Wayne, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Great. So I'm going to limit testimony to 3 minutes, and go ahead and be sure to introduce yourself for the record. Go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Heimer. I live at 1098 Gina Pump Road in Fairbanks. I'm that guy who has written to you so much about 161, and I'm also the guy that Mr. Grasser wrote to you about that said, I might be wrong. I might be wrong. In my working life, I have 25 years with the Department of Fish and Game, primarily in doll sheep. Since I retired 17 years ago, I've been up to my ears in doll sheep, special permits through the Wild Sheep Foundation and so forth, and I allege I know something about doll sheep markets in the auction business. HB 161 proposes to significantly increase the longer-term future wildlife conservation budget by turning pre-hunters into dedicated hunter conservationists. The assumption that this will work over the longer haul and the corollary assumption that the decline in hunting license sales can be fixed by spending money on education seems to me based more on hope than actual data. I'm gratified that the doll sheep that was formerly in Section 1 has gone over to where it will be matched by PR funds, but I remain concerned about adding a third doll sheep permit because it may dilute the market. The doll sheep permit market is extremely volatile and based almost entirely on the presumption of an advantage that the purchaser might gain. If there's no advantage, the permits don't sell well. I've seen the bid price for the most desirable of our doll sheep permits vary from $200,000 to $20,000. Right now, the Chugach permit is doing very, very well for us. I do not anticipate that we'll maintain that value because of the biology that seems to be happening down there in the Chugach Mountains. Additionally, there seem to be some questions about statutory and constitutional acceptability of House Bill 161. The bill's backers say these questions could not have arisen because they were careful during drafting. Nevertheless, since the bill has been written, they have arisen, and I'd like to see those addressed, perhaps through judiciary review or whatever is appropriate. Finally, I'm a little uncomfortable with the Department of Fish and Game determining how NGOs spend the money generated from the permits. I'm all for cooperation between NGOs, which are inherently special interests, as am I, and the department. I prefer a separation of funding to preserve the sometimes adversarial, but I think helpful, relationship between NGOs and their managing agency. I argue that while confrontation may be unpleasant, service bureaucracies like ADF and G need the challenge to see beyond their status quo. NGOs have always served this role, and I would like to see it preserved. My recommendation is do not pass HB 161 out of this committee unless you forward it to Senate Judiciary or maybe Finance. There's just too much hope and too many questions about this bill to pass it as it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Heimer. Further, any questions for him? Yes, Senator Dyson has a question for you, Wayne.
Yeah, Wayne, I appreciate you weighing in and also how rational your arguments are. I certainly have received a lot of communication of Alaskans worried that there would be less game available for Alaskans, and I realize these numbers are pretty small, but it seems like there's a significant concern out there. Do you care to comment on that?
I think the addition of one more doll sheep permit will not materially affect anybody's actual opportunity. However, a permit without a home isn't worth very much. You know, anybody that might buy this permit can currently go almost anywhere in Alaska to hunt sheep, and the only thing that will give the sheep permit value is the impression that there's a spectacular advantage associated with it. So while it won't affect any Alaskan's chances all that much, I think it is a significant thing to think about.
All right. Thank you.
Any further questions for Wayne? All right. Seeing none, thank you, Wayne, for your testimony. So Karen Gordon was next there in Fairbanks at the LIO.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify, Madam Chair. My name is Karen Gordon. I live in Fairbanks and recently retired from the state as an administrative officer after almost 30 years with the Department of Fish and Game and Department of Natural Resources, where I often dealt with contracts and MOUs. I ask that HB 161 be killed, and if not that, at least be sent to the Finance Committee for due diligent consideration because of its impossible $0 fiscal note. HB 161 is rife with a myriad of problems that make the bill indefensible. Here are some that stand out to me. Number one, it's not even necessary because nothing's actually broken. The state has made over $4 million via permit sales through the Wild Sheep Foundation alone. Doll sheep are the big money ticket, and I'm concerned that free permits will dilute the exclusivity of the market, thus driving down the price. Number two, I believe it violates state procurement laws by funneling money earned from common use resources to a singular NGO via a sole source contract which yields a small return to the department that is now realized through a competitive process. And three, the $0 fiscal note is unrealistic. Writing one or more MOUs, allocating 42 permits, which are presumed in this bill, assessing and approving the involved NGO's intended operating plan, accounting for funding splits, auditing the backup documentation for the expenditures necessary for each of the 42 permits, completing follow-up evaluations on 42 permits, etc., isn't going to be without cost. Will department staff do all of this for free? In my state career, I dealt with contracts and MOUs, and just one can be very time-consuming, but 42 of them cannot be managed for nothing. Based on my many years as an administrator with the state, knowing the effort it takes to manage one contract or MOU, I have to seriously question this bill's $0 fiscal note to manage 42 contracts. I prefer to see this bill killed because nothing is broken. Benefits to Alaskan are ambiguous at best, and the amount returned to the department is reduced significantly. If it must survive, however, it really needs to go to Senate Finance because a zero fiscal note is unrealistic and illogical. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Karen. Any questions from committee members from Karen? All right, seeing none. I've just been handed some more LIO sheets. And I am aware that there's someone else there in Fairbanks, but there's someone here in the room that needs to leave early. So I'm going to take a quick detour here to the room in Juneau, and Ron Somerville had requested to testify, and he needs to leave early. So I'm going to have him go ahead and come up. Then we're going to go back to the Fairbanks LIO. Al Barrett is there. Welcome, Ron.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate it. First, I need to apologize. My name is Ron Somerville. I live here in Juneau. And I didn't know about this bill till 3 weeks ago, so I apologize to the prime sponsor and all the people who have supported it through the process. I represent the Territorial Sportsmen and myself. I was in the department as Director of Wildlife when this issue came up originally. The purpose was to generate money for Wildlife Safeguard. They're having a hard time generating money for their volunteer program. It then morphed into, well, we can probably get some money for a fish and game fund to match some of the federal dollars, which we were having a hard time generating fish and game fund. And so that's how this kind of came about like it is. Now it's going to more support for the NGOs. Now, I'll be right up front and say we don't oppose many programs. I've seen sponsor statements and say, gee, we really like this program and that program, which our money comes through for. We support that. The question is, which we said from the beginning, the oversight by the legislature, when you give 100% of something to an organization, you're saying you're going to control that money by a memorandum of agreement. And like I told the director of Wildlife, I said, Doug, you're not going to be there forever. I've known of governors who have had directors there that I didn't agree with. They might give a permit to Greenpeace or Friends of Animals. What's going to stop them from doing that? I'd rather see the legislature have some oversight in this process. And plus, having as much money going to the Fish and Game Fund as possible is important because that's the way we match a 3-to-1, and we're having a hard time doing that now. What this division needs is a license increase. This program generates about $100,000+ a year. That is a pittance in terms of what they need to match the federal money. So this is not a solution. The other things I want to point out is I served on Board of Game for 5 years, 24 years in the department. I'm now serving on CACFA. And some of the data I've seen, well, this is only a small percentage. You got to look at the whole picture. I mean, you can look at caribou permits, for instance, and say, geez, they've gone down terribly. Yeah, well, the Mulchatna herd is down to zero. The board had to essentially stop non-resident hunting in Mulchatna because we don't have any caribou left there. Similarly, there's conflicts between the subsistence and the non-subsistence users in the Nelchina. Non-residents are being pushed out. But similarly, residents are being affected. When you look at the federal overreach program and the impact on hunting opportunities in the state, they're being diminished almost consistently day by day, by week, by whatever. The number of areas that are available to us to have hunting by residents is diminishing. When you take a pool of permits, 40 or whatever it is, you're going to have some conflict with residents. Let me give you some examples. There's nothing in here that requires these permits to come from a non-resident pool, yet 47% of the permits are sold outside. and rightfully so. You want to generate money, that's where the money is. But the point is, maybe they should come from the non-resident pool in Alaska rather than from the general pool of permits. Even though it's a small percentage, they add up. That's what I'm getting at. On the border game, we had constant conflicts between resident and non-residents. Most of the residents saying, eliminate the non-resident. You can't do that legally. But there's always that friction. I just wanted to bring that up. This is a slippery slope, too. If you look at other states that have got into this process, they end up with hundreds, like Utah, Arizona, and other places, a number of these permits. And where does it come from? It comes from the pool. Residents and non-residents are allowed to hunt in the state.
Mr. Somerville, I'm going to have to ask you to summarize. Your 3 minutes are up.
I appreciate that. TSI asked for two things, and I do appreciate the sponsor moving the sheep permit. That was the big one into the Section 2. We'd prefer the bison went into Section 2 as well. There were no 100% anymore except for leaving elk there because Petersburg, they do use that, and elk are hard to sell permits, or hard to sell raffle tickets. 8 elk permit, though, is too many. There's too many being issued here. Anyway, that's my major concerns, and if you look at the agreements that are in existence right now, you'll find that there's very little control over what happens to the money that the nonprofits keep. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for Mr. Somerville? All right. Seeing none, we'll move back then to the Fairbanks LIO. Al Barrett is there. Al, can you hear us?
Yes, Madam Chair, I can hear you.
Great. Go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Well, for the record, my name is Al Barrett. I reside in Fairbanks. I'm testifying on my behalf. I just want to make a few comments. Last week I listened to the hearing that was an invite only, and it was mainly the NGOs that were invited to this. And the one thing that stood out in my mind was none of them were asking for more money or more opportunity to raise money. They were just touting how good their programs were working with the monies they have. The second thing I'd like to point out is, you know, the department has been really fighting and trying to keep this bill alive to raise this money, yet when I was at the last Board of Game meeting, March 14th, the department didn't bat an eyelid when they lost approximately $180,000 to muskox tags when the board reduced the bull muskox tag from $500 to $25. And one thing I did spend a lot of time doing today was looking at the education aspect, and I was trying to find some statistics that would show educating hunters increased the sale of license or increased the interest in the hunting sports. And I couldn't find that. There's no correlation to educating hunters and making them long-time hunters or getting them active in the shooting sports. So I'd like to also see this, if this bill doesn't fail here, is the Senate finance, so this fiscal note could be looked at. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions from committee members for Al? All right. Seeing none, I'm going to move now to the Homer LIO. I have 3 folks there in the Homer LIO signed up. I'm going to start with Dave Lyon. Dave, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Welcome. If you would give us your name and identification and your testimony.
Yeah. Thank you for hearing me today. My name is Dave Lyon. I'm a resident of Homer. I'm here as a longtime Alaskan hunter and chair of the Homer Fish and Game Advisory Board. I am also an active member of the Alaska chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Despite a whirlwind of last-minute revisions, this bill is still at its heart an affront to Alaskan hunters and in direct conflict with the common use provisions of our Constitution. There is not a problem that this bill is a fix for. In fact, there's no problem here at all. The governor's tag program has been a success in its current form and has provided ample funding for many organizations to further their goals. The much-lauded Becoming an Outdoors Woman program is an ongoing program, and I have not been led to believe it is in current jeopardy of being defunded, nor is it exclusively funded by the governor's tag. In fact, Alaska Backcountry Hunters and Anglers has funded scholarships for the program in the past with no income from any governmental handout. This legislation is not a response to an ongoing issue. It is simply an example of an organization wanting more tags, ostensibly for the ultimate good of Alaskans and the Department of Fish and Game. Well, I'm sorry. We would all like more tags, but there aren't any. For an increase in auction tags, there obviously needs to be a reduction in tags available to regular hunters, and I mean those that can't afford a high-dollar auction for a tag they may, if lucky, get as a drawing permit. I do not know any Alaskans who feel giving a tag to a corporate entity of any kind is worth a reduction in their odds for drawing one of these coveted permits. In order to raise more money for the department, we need to have increases in our hunting and fishing licenses and a nominal tag fee for big game tags. With the Pittman-Robertson funds available to the state, each dollar is met 3-to-1, and at the moment, despite record funds available, the state has had to leave some of this money on the table because we aren't raising enough to match it. There's no reason to believe that this legislation will generate significantly more funding for fish and game, especially with an added percentage of the auction proceeds being funneled away from the department and flooding the market with tags. In closing, the simple fact that the proceeds of the sale of these tags profit the benefiting organization obviously violates the common use clause of our Constitution, which is, wherever occurring in their natural state, fish, wildlife, and waters are reserved to the people for common use. Thank you for taking the time to listen. Please consider what you're going to hear here today, and I urge you to reject this bill.
Thank you for your testimony, Dave. Any questions? Senator Machicki.
Thank you. Chair, through the chair for Mr. Lyon. Dave, I just have a question for you. It doesn't sound like you have a problem with the existing statute and tag plan, if you will. Can you tell me why you don't feel like the existing plan has common use issues, but the new plan perhaps does?
The first thing that comes to mind to me would be the additional increase in the revenue that the auctioning organizations get to keep from the proceeds. I believe it's gone up from 10% to 20%. Now, when the 10% is mentioned in the past, it's been considered administrative fees, administrative costs, and what it costs them to actually have the auction go on. I think that this has been such a long-standing issue that probably it might actually fail the common clause challenge, but nobody's bothering about it right now. There's no reason to bring this up and create an issue. I mean, like I said, there's not a problem here, and by generating all of this attention, they may create a bigger problem than they had before, which was none.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Dave, for your testimony. Next, we'll go to George Matz, who is also there in Homer. George, can you hear us?
Yes.
Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is George Matz. I live in Fritz Creek, and I'm a member of the Homer Advisory Committee. This HB 6161 makes about as much sense to me as the legislative seat being decided by auction instead of vote. The main reasons I'm opposed to HB 161 is basically because it's a privatization of Alaska's common use resources. And we're continuing this trend towards adding, towards privatizing our resources, and this goes down that slippery slope of adding more hunts and more proceeds for private interests. Now, although these are nonprofit organizations that benefit by this, they are private organizations, not public organizations. Privatization puts more emphasis on making money and less on conservation. The result usually turns out to be non-sustainable harvesting of fish and game resources, less biodiversity, and less opportunity for the average hunter. Furthermore, HB 161 deletes language that prohibits money from being used for political purposes. These political purposes may not be in accordance with ADF&G and other wildlife user groups. I do agree that ADF&G needs more funding. If it is to be have science-based sustainable management of Alaska's fish and wildlife resources. Unfortunately, historically, ADF&G has been underfunded by the state in terms of its general funds. I've long felt that the state should be putting more general funds into this. Fish and game resources are important to the general public, and we should be paying more for it. But given what we have, I think what needs to be done is to go back to the drawing boards here and look at other options for increasing funding to fish and game. One thing I would like to bring up is about 20 years ago, there was this concept of a watchful wildlife tax, excise tax on watchable wildlife gear such as binoculars, field guides, and equipment, and that could be added to the fish could be added as part of the match for the Fish and Game Fund. And I think we need to maybe look at that. It was a national program that failed ultimately because Congress felt they didn't want to add another tax. But it generally had support of the user groups, and mixed support from the industry. But you know, it's I think maybe some states, after it failed, some states did in apply some of these principles. And I think in the state of Alaska here, we could look at this. And by having some kind of watchable wildlife tax, we would. There's a huge amount of money, I think, could be raised in this accord, and it would be without depriving people of opportunities for these permits. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, George. Any questions for George? Seeing none. The third person there in Homer is Tom Young. Tom?
Hello.
Welcome.
My name's Tom Young. I live here in Homer. Just representing myself, member of the Fish and Game Advisory Committee, and also Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. I'll keep it brief so more people can speak. I don't have a fancy script here to read from, but for all the reasons you have heard and will hear, I'm also opposed to this bill, and somewhat bothers me that we're selling our game, so to speak, which is not legal to start with. So, anyway, that's about all I've got for the moment.
All right, great. Thank you, Tom, for your testimony. Any questions for Tom from committee members? All right, seeing none. So now I'm going to go to the LIO in Petersburg. There's a person online there to speak, and then I'll go to Kodiak. So first, Petersburg, Brian Lynch. Brian, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, and for the opportunity to testify today. I'm Brian Lynch, founding member and trustee of the Devil's Thumb Archers Archery Club here in Petersburg. Now, our concerns are to maintain the four LNIO and L permits and the ability to keep the 100% of the proceeds that go to the nonprofits for the auction or raffle of these permits. Devil's Thumb Archers is a small, local 501c3 nonprofit organization with fewer than 100 members, most of which are family members with kids, making up nearly one-half the total membership. We have been raffling off an LNIO and L permit for, I think, nearly 15 years now, and generally the revenue received from the raffle is $500 to $1,000 and has ranged from less than $300 to nearly $2,000 early in the program. While the total dollars is not a large amount, the impact of our small organization is substantial. We use this money to maintain our archery range, purchase 3D archery targets, which are very expensive, and put on tournaments, open houses, provide archery instruction, and free use of equipment by our members, with the emphasis on encouraging participation by kids. The local schools have even occasionally used the archery range for physical education classes. Anyway, again, I respectfully request that the LNIO and ELK provisions in Section 1C of HB 161 remain as currently written in the statute. Thank you for your consideration of our request.
Thank you for your testimony, Brian. So just for clarification, just so the committee is clear, are you in favor of the bill or not? I heard kind of both aspects.
You know, we want to make sure that our ability to raffle off these permits and be able to keep 100% of the proceeds remains in the statute, in the bill, however form it comes out. We realize that there's concerns that other people have, particularly, I guess, with sheep on this. We don't have any interest in that whatsoever, however that comes out. That's not our concern. We just want to make sure, however this comes out, that the Edelin Island elk portion of this does not change from what it currently is in statute.
Okay, great. Senator Machiki had a question.
Yeah, Madam Chair. I mean, I believe even the CS essentially has the same outcome for the Mr. Lynch.
Petersburg?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it looks like that is secure in this new committee substitute that we have, Brian, just to let you know that. Good. Well, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Next, we'll go to Kodiak. Richard Rohrer is online in Kodiak. Richard, can you hear us?
I can, Madam Chair. Thank you, and at this time, I'll forego testimony. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thanks for calling in. Let's see. So the Anchorage LIO has four people here. Steve Flory is the first person on the list, and then we'll go to Gary Stevens. So, Stephen, can you hear us?
Yes, Madam Chairman.
Welcome.
My name is Steve Flory. I live in Anchorage, Alaska. I am a past chairman of the Anchorage Fishing Game Advisory Committee and a past president of the Wild Sheep Foundation chapter in Alaska. There are numerous things that previous testimony has been given that it illuminates the problems with this bill. However, I want to touch back on the sheep once again. There is no reason to add another sheep tag. It will not add money to the department, especially when you reduce it by 30% instead of 10%. These sheep tags at these different options have always been used as a draw. That's the reason that Alaska has got so much money back from them and will continue to if you do not change that application. So upping it to 30% isn't needed. The organizations are already interested, and they will continue to be interested, and they will continue to use them. The next thing I'd like to point out is if you are adding another sheep tag, then there is a fiscal note. How this keeps getting pushed by and forward without going to Finance Committee is beyond me. The department is literally either giving up or adding considerably more money. Actually, it would end up losing money because when there are only two tags are worth a lot of money. Three tags are worth less money. Four tags are worth less money. And it goes down like this. It's the law of diminishing return. You can't get around it. This is a bill to fix something that isn't broken so that it will help one particular group and one particular lobbyist. And I'm sorry that the bill has got this far without talking to all the other NGOs that would have an interest. And I'm going to just leave it with that. But, one last thing is every year advisory committees and the Board of Game are faced with continuing calls for fewer non-residents. And here you are adding another non-resident tag in an already volatile situation. I think even if you were going to pass this, adding more sheep tags is a bad idea at this time. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Steve. A question. So you were with the Wild Sheep Foundation. Did you, were you one of the nonprofits that got raffled off one of these tags or had one to raffle off?
National did. The Alaska chapter did not.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. Any other questions for Steve? All right, seeing none. The next person on the list there in Anchorage is Gary Stevens. Gary?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for listening. I'm Gary Stevens. I live in Chugiak. Been in Alaska for over 40 years. I'm on the board of directors for the Alaska Outdoor Council, life member of NRA, FNAWS, and member of Rough Grouse, SCI, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, et cetera. I have the same problems as most of the people that have testified today have with this bill. It does fix a problem that's not broken. I would like to look specifically at Section 1, where it describes the qualifications for a nonprofit corporation to receive the 100% donated permits. It is a different description or a different qualification in Section 1 than in Section 3, and I don't understand why. But specifically in Section 1, it says that it's a nonprofit corporation that is established to promote these wonderful things, specifically in partnership with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I've talked to Reg Legal. I've talked to some of the people that drafted the bill. They've tried to assure me that that doesn't limit it to any one group. I'm afraid that at this current time, that it does limit it to one specific group. I think there's only one organization in Alaska that has currently been established to work in partnership with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. It may not limit it to one group in that any other group that wants to form at this point and create a new nonprofit or an NGO would be able to be awarded this permit if the Department of Fish and Game agreed with that. the biggest issue is that I don't understand why that's different than the description for a qualifying nonprofit in Section 3. It's discriminatory and very, very bothersome. And the sheep permits as well. I don't think there should be any sheep permits on here at all. Anyway, I'm going to leave it at that. I appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to this, and I hope you've heard everybody. This bill is 100% about money, and if you guys decide to pass it out of resource, I would sure expect it to go to finance. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Gary. Let me see if there are any questions for you. Any questions for Gary? Looks like Senator Machiki might have one.
Okay. I have two questions. One is, we talked a little bit in riddles. Can you just in the person who testified, Mr. Stevens, in your view, what type of organization would qualify under Section 1?
Mr. Machiki, through the chair. Specifically says a nonprofit corporation established to promote education and outdoor traditions and conservation and wildlife protection programs in partnership with the department. So that is a corporation that was nonprofit that was created to specifically work in partnership with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The only organization that I'm aware of at this point that qualifies for that is the Outdoor Heritage Foundation of Alaska.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Gary, for your testimony. Let's see. Now in Anchorage, we have Zachary Dunlap.
Good afternoon. My name is Zachary Dunlap. I'm here today to testify on House Bill 61 in opposition of the bill. I'm testifying as myself today. I'm representing myself. About myself, I'm a younger generation Alaskan. About 2.5 years ago, I had the pleasure of meeting my fiance on a bear hunt. That was our first date. We will raise our kids to hunt. This bill, unfortunately, I'm later in the testimony, and all the points I have, I submitted an email letter. It's been covered. It's all the reasons are there. There was a few questions asked. If it works now, how will it change if it already works? Well, the value drops for everyday Alaskan hunters like myself, like my fiance, like our future family. These groups aren't going after tags that are run-of-the-mill or easier to draw. If you look at the draw supplement and the results from past years, these tags are less than 1% odds of drawing. True, adding these permits is only 0.7% of the total, but they're not going after that bulk group. They're going after specific tags. I had the pleasure of hunting sheep in Delta in 2012. I harvested a sheep. There was also a comment made, I believe, by the sponsor of the last committee meeting that 40% of tags aren't used by Alaskans. I take offense to that. I use every tag I have. We went on a moose hunt for 2 weeks last year in the Yukon. Fortunate enough to draw a party hunt, we were able to harvest 2 moose. Most of our protein comes from meat. I'm 30 years old. We're raising our family in Alaska, and I don't appreciate this bill. It works now. The money that they've raised, all I heard from past testimony from these groups is it's been great. I haven't heard one person ask for more money. And I believe this will affect everyday Alaskans like myself, like my fiance. And I'm not willing to sit here and let it go. I have to testify. I have to send emails. And I will continue as long as this bill is live. I appreciate your time.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony. Let me see if anyone has any questions for you. All right. Seeing none. There's one other person left at the Anchorage LIO, and then we're going to go to the off-net. Yolanda, you are there in the Anchorage LIO.
Oh, hi. My name is Yolanda. I am here to testify against HB 161. I am no belong to the commercial hunting industry, neither to the sportsman council or trophy hunters. So those bills are little complicated, but I know what are they doing. And those public I am asking you, who are a public servers, to kill HB 161, because it looks like the wildlife is in action by you all. But remember, the natural resources belong to all Alaskans, not to the politicians, neither to the trophy hunters. So I am going to speak in general. since the past and present administration and legislators through the Department of Fish and Game Board launched the barbaric and human method of snaring bears, the aerial warden bear hunting, the use of carbon monoxide to kill wolves passing their dens, and the indiscriminately trapping on wolves and bears for experimental program, I am not against hunting. I am against sport hunting. People like I have been asking those public servants who are acting like if they were the master of the air to stop this savage snaring and wolf hunting and excessive trapping with no mercy or compassion on God's creation. They claim that they implement the barbaric method because they want to boost moose and caribou population managers for abundance. Abundance for who? Abundance is a meat. If the state continues to manage the wild, there will be no animals for indigenous Alaska who depend on the wild animals as the main source of food. Wolves and bears are being used as scapegoats in this issue. Now they want to give it away the wildlife. Those politicians who practice hunting as a sport and their special interests to the sportsmen and trophy hunters organization. I am asking those politicians to reject HB 161 and HB 268. The natural resources belong to all Alaskans, not to the politicians, not to the sportsmen and trophy hunters. Politicians are trading the Alaska wildlife for votes and money for their campaign. Some of those lobbies are investing money on the politician campaigning in exchange for favors for political representation in Juneau and in exchange for favors on Alaska wildlife. The Constitution says that the resources should be managed for the maximum benefits for Alaskans. Therefore, all of those who are running the commercial hunting industry need to stop promoting the Alaska wildlife, where inside and outside trophy hunters come from all over the world to kill moose and caribou for trophies and other animals.
Yolanda.
And the seven members of the World Game are dictating.
Thank you for your testimony, Yolanda.
Including you all, the politicians, because you are the ones who are implementing those barbarics and bills which only benefit yourself
your
and your
three
special
minutes
interest.
Are up.
Inside
Thank
and
you
outside
for your
traffic.
We're going to move on now to the off-net. Off-net, I have Alpheus Bullard. He's online for questions only. And Doug Vincent Lang is also online for questions only. But also following them in the off-net is Gary Gearhart Palmer. Gary, can you hear us?
Hello.
Hello, Gary.
Hello. Yes, Madam Chairman, this is Gary Gearhart. I'm the president of Safari Club International, the Alaska chapter. And we are definitely, our chapter is in favor of this bill. I know we have short time here, so additionally, there's a couple of things that I think are important. One is a requirement that's going to make the nonprofits work with the departments to reach an agreement where the funds raised should be spent. That's an important item there. I think that's going to increase the effort for the fish and game totally. And the nonprofits to be engaged in that process, raising that to the 30%, to increase that their opportunity to raise money for their specific projects. And it's not just restricted to the one, as the one gentleman seemed to point out, but we are definitely in favor for that, and basically that's what I just wanted to say. I hope you folks do approve this.
Thank you for your testimony, Gary. Any questions for Gary? All right, not seeing any. Next person on the off-net is Bethany Markham in Anchorage. Bethany, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Bethany Markham. I'm a graduate of Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Becoming an Outdoors Woman program, also known as BOW. And through that program, I learned to hunt and fish here in Alaska, as well as learning many other outdoor skills. As a result of what I learned through the BOW program, I now donate much of my time to support conservation efforts in Alaska. I also buy a hunting, fishing, and trapping license every year, and I fill my freezer with wild game and fish. I'm one of many boat graduates that I continue to stay in touch with who enthusiastically participates in these activities now and who volunteer to support conservation in many capacities thanks to what we've learned. So there are many of us who have gained from those programs and as a result have bought fishing and hunting licenses consistently and have decided to give back by volunteering to support many non-for-profits that are working on conservation issues in Alaska. I strongly support HB 161 because I think there's a couple different important reasons. First of all, I think the change in ratio from 90-10 to 70-30 will create more of an incentive for some of the nonprofits that I work with to engage in the process. And I think that it's important that a requirement is added that these nonprofits work with Fish and Game so that the funds are spent appropriately on the kinds of projects and the kinds of items that are prioritized. Also, I know that state funds are very tight right now with the budget, so this bill essentially provides a way for the nonprofits to raise money for their projects instead of coming to the legislature and asking for a handout. That's a much better approach than just saying, here's this project, we want you to fund it. This allows those nonprofits to be able to raise money, and that's always better than just getting money directly from the state, since we particularly know that we're looking at cuts. So I hope that you'll support HB 161, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Bethany. Any questions for Bethany? Seeing none. Next person on the off-net is Ken Taylor. Ken, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ken Taylor. I reside in Anchorage, and it's been a real pleasure listening to this discussion because I've been hearing from a lot of my friends through all the years I've spent with Fish and Game along with them. And I was calling primarily on behalf of myself, but after hearing the testimony, I think I should disclose that I'm a member of the board of the Outdoor Heritage Foundation of Alaska and have been since its inception. Primarily, we've been raising our funding for running this nonprofit through a charity shoot that's held every summer. And so we're not looking at this bill as a funding mechanism for just our organization. Our organization supports a lot of programs that are supported by the Department of Fish and Game. The Becoming an Outdoors Woman is one of them. The Youth Shooting Leagues, Hunters for the Hungry. There are a number that I think all of us that are on this teleconference can agree are good things. Now, if the provision in Section A that says a nonprofit organization established to promote education and outdoor traditions and conservation, et cetera, limits the pool of nonprofits just to the Outdoor Heritage Foundation, I think that needs to be changed, but I don't think it does. In the many years I worked for the Wildlife Department or Division and the Department in general, we worked with the Foundation for North American Wild Sheep. We worked with the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, the Rough Grouse Society, Ducks Unlimited, a number of organizations on conservation and wildlife programs in partnership with the department. So I don't, and I'm not a lawyer, but I don't believe that this language is that restrictive. And I do support this bill. I think I've worked, like Ron Somerville, through many different revisions of the governor's permit legislation to get us to the point where we are today, and I think that this is a step in the right direction. Now, I understand the Wild Sheep Foundation's concerns about diluting the number of permits, and potentially they're right. I really don't have the figures to say one way or the other. But there has been some discussion on the phone about the Common Use Clause in Article 8 of the Constitution and how fish, wildlife, and its waters are reserved to the people for common use. The part that was left out was that this is subject to beneficial uses. And I think this is a beneficial use. When we can educate our children, other people in our society about outdoor traditions and what conservation means. I think it's a good thing, and I hope your committee will support this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Ken. Any questions for Ken? All right, seeing none. The next person on the off-net is George Pierce in Kasilov. George, can you hear us?
Yes, this is George Pierce. Can you hear me? Hello?
Welcome.
George Pierce calling from Kasilov, Alaska, HB 161. We'll double the number of big game permits donated to organizations to auction off, and most often to non-residents. Better to control in all of Alaska. It was because enough game wasn't enough game for the Alaskans, not for non-residents. Show me in this bill where it would be good for the either the state of Alaska or the general public. Alaskan hunts, we hunt for food. Non-residents hunt for horns, and they rarely take the meat home with them. They donate it. We're required to take it home. We forget responsibility to manage Alaskans' natural resources for the benefit of all Alaskans. Alaska Constitution, Article 8, states the legislation shall provide for the utilization, development, and conservation of all natural resources belonging to the state, including land, water, for the maximum benefit of its people. They couldn't get rid of 19 permits, so you want to give them 42 permits and 20% more money, and some permits, they can keep all the money. I see where this bill erased the prohibition on these organizations using proceeds to contribute to political candidates, ballot propositions, or lobbyists. How convenient, huh? So now they can fund you through their means. Next, these nonprofit organizations will be asking for special considerations, requests beyond the what the Alaskan hunters are granted. Wildlife belongs to the Alaskans. Stop giving away my resources to nonprofits for non-residents. More money for nonprofits and less money for wildlife. These nonprofits, where does it say in the Constitution that you're even required to fund these folks forever or at all? Thank you for letting me comment.
Thank you for your testimony, George. Let's see. Back here now to the room in Juneau. Eddie Grasser is signed up to testify. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Eddie Grasser. I'm with several organizations, I guess, so I should disclose that. Safari Club International, I'm Vice President of the National Organization. I'm also the President of the Outdoor Heritage Foundation. And I come before you today to encourage you to support this bill. And I suggest also, before I forget, that you might want to ask Mr. Bullard, who's online, about the question that was raised by Mr. Stevens in Section 1. But I happen to know through some research, Mr. Taylor touched on it, that there are several organizations, nonprofits, that have gotten that have worked with the Department on Education projects, like Women in the Outdoors, WEDI, which is a National Wild Turkey Foundation educational effort for women. We're not the only organization that has an MOA with the department. So anybody that wants to go to the department, agree to a conditions of an MOA, and agree to the terms of the language in the first part of this bill, can do so. There's nothing that stops them from doing that. They just have to go to the department and do it. And the department's going to have to talk with them. And it's a public organization, an equal opportunity. It's one of the reasons we have to let young gentlemen who haven't learned at home how to do hunting and trapping and fishing into our Becoming an Outdoors Woman program, because it's run by the department, so it's equal opportunity. So a lot of people don't know that. But what I would like to touch on today is, the current system may not be broken, but what the Department of Fish and Game and several of the NGOs that support this bill, including Safari Club International, the National Rifle Association of America, and the Rough Grouse Society, have all testified in favor of the bill, is that we were looking for a mechanism to help the department's education programs. The current governor's permits only allows for conservation programs and law enforcement programs. Education is a vital part of what the department needs to do from here on out. It's anecdotal, but in 1999, and I sent a letter on this, there was a big meeting in Lansing, Michigan that a lot of groups attended from across the nation. And the gist of the meeting was that we all agreed that license sales were decreasing across the board. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service five-year studies showed that. And so from that point forward, a lot of effort was put into recruitment and retention programs or education programs. The result of that in the latest five-year survey that was done, we actually had an increase. Now, maybe that was for some other reason, but there's been a lot of time, effort, and money spent on education across the nation in the last 10 years. So I'm guessing it had some impact. I've also sent you reports from the Becoming an Outdoor Woman program that clearly demonstrates that people are buying licenses as a result of taking that program. So when you look at this bill, I think there's those people that are concerned about what they get out of the pie right now, Alaskans, and we're not looking at it that way. We're looking at the practical fact that America is becoming more urbanized as a culture. I mean, my degree is in history. I'm not a biologist. So I think you have to look at that. That's our vision. Our vision is if you don't do education, there won't be anybody buying hunting and fishing licenses.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for Mr. Grasser? Yes, Senator Machicki.
Just a quick one there, Mr. Grasser. We heard comments. My understanding of the change is that it removes the not to be used for a contribution. The only thing that the money can be used for, my understanding, is to support outdoor tradition educational projects and conservation and wildlife protection programs approved by the department. So can you tell me what those might look like as opposed to things that folks might fear that direct someone politically or direct one to oppose some kind of a ballot proposition? I just want to understand how you see it.
Well, I think first of all, I think that you'd have to ask Doug Vincent Lang this question, but I think it'd be very unlikely that a department person, representative, working on an MOA with a nonprofit or with an agreement with a nonprofit for one of these permits on the 30% would ever consider allowing the nonprofit or approving the nonprofit spending it on political purposes. That's number one. Number two, there's a couple things that have been mentioned in testimony that are totally incorrect. 501c3s are not private enterprises. They're public corporations. And our books are open to the public. You can walk into any nonprofit's office and demand to see their book, even if you're not a member. That's under IRS regulations. So, and under IRS regulations, 501c3 nonprofits are not allowed to do politics. Otherwise, they lose their status and fundraising capabilities. So I think there's some misinformation or misunderstanding out there with some of the members of the public. But, yeah, you know, as a 501c3 nonprofit, you're not going to be able to, even if you've got the department to agree that you could spend money on politics, under IRS regulations, you're not allowed to.
Okay. Further questions, Senator Machicki?
If I can just clarify, Madam Chair. I mean, there certainly are. You know, we've all witnessed C3s improperly engaging in some activities. Some of us call them out, some don't, you know.
Right.
So I understand the fear. I certainly would like to ensure that these dollars are only used for educational purposes. So I think it's worth pointing out and ensuring that doesn't occur.
Very good.
That's not our intention. Again, you'd have to ask Doug Vincent Lang that question.
And he's online, and we'll possibly get to him. Senator Dyson had a question.
Yeah, thank you. My question is not pejorative or nasty, but of the list of people that are groups that you mentioned that are in favor of this, are any of them liable to get any of the funds that would come through this program?
I would say probably all of them are, but a lot of the groups that aren't in favor of this would have just the same opportunity. They just have to apply.
Wow. So there might be 4, 6, 8, 30 groups out there that might be qualified and could qualify?
That's true. That is true. There could be, there's, what is there, 600 and some nonprofits registered in the state of Alaska? They would have to be supportive of the hunting tradition in order to apply, so that would include groups like the Alaska Outdoor Council, who have gotten permits in this program before. Safari Club International, the foundation or the Wild Sheep Foundation would reinstitute a chapter here. They would be eligible. Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Rough Grouse Society have each gotten permits. The Alaska Bowhunters Association has gotten permits and would continue to do so. There's, you know, the department's an equal opportunity. It is required under a lot of equal opportunity. They can't just focus in on one or two groups. They're going to have to accept applications from all groups, evaluate them, and choose which ones they think are the best.
All right. Thank you.
Great. Further questions for Mr. Grasser? All right. Seeing none, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Is there anyone else in the room that wishes to testify on the bill? Please come forward. Is there anyone else online that wishes to testify? Okay.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman, committee members, for the opportunity to testify on 161. My name's Rod Arno. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Outdoor Council. And the Outdoor Council's umbrella organization, of course, of about 48 clubs, and we just met here a couple weeks ago, and the member clubs chose to oppose this legislation as written. That for the Outdoor Council, the most important thing about this bill is we don't want to diminish the integrity of the Fish and Game Fund and the Pittman Robertson that matches that. When the process of the auction permits was first started, that Ron Somerville was the executive director then, and Steve Franks' legislation to get that, it was Ron Somerville who wanted to make sure this money didn't go into the general fund, that it went into Pittman Robertson funding, and so that's important to us. But it's really interesting when you look at that legislation back in 1989, that the concern of Ron Somerville and the Outdoor Council and others at that time was this going to infringe on Article 8, Section 3 on common use? And at that time, the argument was, well, it's only one bison, and that was all right because it was a small number and that there wouldn't be opposition to it. And at that time, then the money was to go to the Wildlife Safeguard Program. And, you know, since then, AOC has supported the legislation when it went through, and it increased to go ahead and do the elk tags as well as just the big game tags. Our biggest thing, and I said this, you know, last year when we were first made aware of the bill and there was an opportunity to testify, is the accountability and transparency. And, you know, we certainly still don't see that, and I've spent the last year trying to track that down to see if the problem was is I just wasn't knowledgeable of it. Well, the legislature has oversight, and it's in statute, in AS 1605-130D, that the Department of Fish and Game has to report each year on the expenditures out of the Fish and Game Fund. Well, I've tracked those expenditures, and there's hunter services in there, but they don't account for the donations that have gone to the NGOs, to where they spent that money. And that's a major concern, you know, to us. And the Outdoor Council has, the fund site has gotten the permit, and we've, you know, shared it with the department, with some of it went back, but there's no accounting of that money going back to the Department of Public Safety because we chose the Delta Bison to put money back into the safeguard program. There's no accountability of the money that we kept. So we're concerned about that. And the biggest thing about this bill right now is that we feel that it will jeopardize the current process it's in right now. It's getting away with not being challenged because it's such a small number and it's a small percentage that goes to the NGOs. You increase from 10 to 30%, and you increase the number that because of sheep specifically, the harvest of those, the harvestable surplus is down, way down, about half of the harvest what it used to be. So the public is well aware that there's a demand, and so all of a sudden it means a lot more to Alaskans. So for that, we just prefer keeping it as it is, and we don't support this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions?
One question, Madam Chair.
Yes, Ms. Senator Machicki.
Through the chair. Mr. Arnold, can you provide us, the chair, with a list of the 48 clubs you represent, please, and maybe she can distribute them to the committee.
Yes, to the chair. Okay.
Second?
Oh. Yes, second question, please, Senator Matucci.
Follow-up through the chair. Mr. Arno, why, and I'm being a little bit of a devil's advocate here, but why would we support this program at all? I mean, if we've got a problem with accounting for past funds, which sounds like a concern to me, why are you okay with the existing legislation but not in support of the revised legislation?
Through the chair, the committee member, Matucci. Yeah, that's a legitimate question, and it's that we see the value of this auction permit process as we did with the original, as it's expanded out, not so much, and that is why I wanted to try to get into it. So I would hope, you know, from this that, you know, there could be an audit. It could be an audit of the entire auction permit process, and we suggested that, and that would be appropriate.
Thank you.
Senator Dyson, you had a question.
Yeah, another awkward one. Is NRA part of the Outdoor Council?
Madam Chair, yes, that the Alaska Outdoor Council is a state affiliate for the NRA.
And to the chair, if I may, and is Eddie's group a part of the Outdoor Council?
Through the chair, no. SCI pulled out of AOC.
Okay. I'm echoing a little bit, but with what Senator Matucci has asked, but name me a dozen or so members off the top of your head of the AOC.
Through the chair, the Territorial Sportsman. The Tanana Valley Sportsmen, the Alaska Outdoor Access Alliance, the Rough Grouse Society. Those are a couple off the top of my head.
Yeah, if I may follow up.
Yes.
I've always appreciated your integrity, including saying today that the oversight of the money you all have gotten hasn't been very well done. That's a candidness I don't often see in this building. when you say that, as you did, that the AOC doesn't recommend we go forward with this, what's the process you go through to get your members to weigh in and let you know that their view is X and authorize you to represent them?
Through the chair. Member Dyson, that what we do is at our annual meeting that meets once a year, and it fluctuates. It meets in South Central or Southeast or Interior, that each club can send a delegate, and they get one vote, and then there are three votes from our individual membership. So if, you know, there's someone that is there from Southeast, so you got three, they each get a vote from one of those areas. And then what we do is we present the legislation, and then we allow our AOC's lobbyist is there, and then I'm there, and they discuss the legislation, and then they the delegates vote on whether they support it or not.
And just to follow up,
yes.
And that implies that the delegates that come have the authority to speak for their group.
Correct, and that's,
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, great. Any further questions? Great. Thanks, Rod.
Thank you.
All right. So that ends public testimony. I do have Alpheus Bullard online for questions, and I would like him to respond to the constitutionality question. Mr. Bullard, can you hear us? And have you heard the questions about whether this is constitutional or not?
Good afternoon. Through the chair, members of the committee, this is Alpheus Bullard, counsel for the legislature, and Senator Gesell, Chair, which question about the constitutionality of this legislation? I'm sorry, I haven't been able to hear all the speakers.
The question pertains to the availability, the constitutional availability of the common use clause in the Constitution. Is this a violation of that?
I think, through the chair, members of the committee, I think that this legislation certainly implicates it. I don't know whether it's a violation or not. There's a spectrum. At a certain point, given the number of permits and the condition, somewhere there will be a line, and it could offend that provision. I don't know if this this piece of legislation does that or not.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Bullard, Department of Law? Okay, great. Would the committee, the bill sponsor, like to come forward, Representative Gaddis, closing remarks?
I've got a cold. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was, in regards to accountability, certainly you had indicated that Mr. Lang was online for that aspect, and I'm sure he could answer that well. Some of the things that I heard here, and I must tell you that this bill, we started last year, went through committee after committee, worked with some of the folks that were online. Some of the things that have come up today certainly haven't come up as we've gone along. Others have. So as we have gone through what I would say are monkey wrenches or red herrings, we've tried our best to fix it, go through them, and then something else comes up. This is certainly the first time I've heard the financial aspect and the accountability. So you certainly heard that ring throughout, that that folks could not understand why it had a zero fiscal note, needed to go to finance. This is the first time we've heard that particular ring. I would like to speak to the part that said, and I think that most of you got it, but in regards to the political gain, we did have in another committee that they essentially wanted this put in, and they wanted not to be used to make a contribution to any candidate for political office or for any organization supporting or opposing ballot propositions or to pay expenses associated with lobbying, legislator, or administration. Again, working with the folks that were not necessarily for this bill and that you heard today, then I heard that this didn't need to have to be in the bill, and in fact, they may be used only to support outdoor tradition. So, you know, I've put things in, I've taken things out, I've put things in and taken them out, and in fairness to some of the folks testifying today that I hadn't heard before, it's fair to say that they may have seen that the political aspect was taken out, not realizing that it was taken out because it didn't need to be put in the first place. So I feel that I've jumped through many, many hoops. I think that the latest one with the doll sheep, I think actually is a plus. I don't think that it's a negative. So, I mean, I like the committee process, but there's a lot of things that I teased somebody. I said, you know, we talk about the fish wars. We almost think that this is the game wars. There are different philosophies and different clubs, and I had no intention of getting involved with the different entities, with the different clubs. I really am looking for what's best for Alaska, Alaskans, and the department on how we can utilize the funds for education. So, quite frankly, that's pretty much the wrap-up. Again, I could say that language in Section 1 stating established to promote education, conservation, and protection in partnership with the department does not refer, as you heard, to any specific group. Any nonprofit that enters a memorandum of agreement with the department can apply for the permits under Section 1. There is no language in the bill that's been stated by the department, both resources committees, that there will be special hunts in closed areas, out-of-season hunts, or allowable helicopter use. Well, that didn't come up a lot today, but it has come up in the past. As we tried to address that, different things have come up. So I guess I would say in closing that we have tried for the last 2 years to go through each and every angle. I admit that AOC, the executive director, is a constituent of mine, and I have been trying to work with him. I think that we're at an impasse at this point. I can appreciate what that club does for Alaska as well. So I say in closing that I'd like to pass this out. It did pass out of the House 30-5, and the five folks that really struggled with it were folks from Fairbanks. There's a particular group in Fairbanks that really is not for this. Five of the House members were absent that day, so that accounts for the 40. So it was overwhelmingly endorsed in the House. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Geddes. Questions for Representative Geddes? All right. Thank you very much. Discussion. Senator McGuire?
Do you want a motion?
Any further discussion from committee members? Yes, Senator Machicki.
It's just a comment, Madam Chair. It's unfortunate because there's so many people on both sides of this issue that normally work very well together on outdoor tradition-related issues. I just hate to see that division. I'm not sure what the answer for it is, but it's painful. It's painful to watch. My only comment. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I'm concerned about the fiscal side of it, and it is a bit surprising to me that didn't get a finance referral in either house.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, if we pass it out, it would be my personal request that you talk with leadership and the finance folks and see if they want to have a look at it.
Certainly.
And I'm very wary of the time, but you're a lot closer to the finish line than I am on most of my legislation.
Sure. All right, then I will entertain a motion. Vice Chair Dyson?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 161. That's the 28LS0530/I version from committee with individual recommendations attached. Zero fiscal.
Is there objection? Seeing none, the bill will pass from this committee. I will take a brief at ease to sign. Record. The next item on our agenda is the CS for House Bill 268, and this is a Big Bull Moose Derby. Teresa Wolstad from Representative Wilson's office is here to present the bill. So welcome, Teresa.
Thank you, and good afternoon, and through the chair. For the record, my name is Teresa Wolstad. I am with Representative Tammy Wilson's office. The representative sends her apologies. She's currently in the House Finance Committee right now at this time frame. So I'm going to go ahead and read off the sponsor statement on that real quick. An act relating to the Big Bull Moose Derby and the Snowtown Ice Classic, relating to the permits for game and chance and the contest of skill. So House Bill 268 would allow the Tenino Valley Sportsmen's Association and advocates for victims of violence to raise funds for their nonprofit organizations. The Big Bull Moose Derbies would be managed by the Tenino Valley Sports Association and will operate much like the other contests that are already allowed under statute. This will take place during the annual moose season by individuals that have acquired all the proper documentation already implemented by the state of Alaska to stay within the legal boundaries of the moose season. Participants must purchase a derby ticket prior to the opening day of the season, and prizes are awarded based on the size or spread of the moose antlers. Anyone who enters the bull moose would, regardless of the antler spread, be entered into a drawing for prizes. The Tenino Valley Sportsmen's Association is a nonprofit organization that hosts training and completes events for the national-ranked University of Alaska Nanook's rifle team, as well as local high school students. It is the home to multiple communities and school events, so the NCAA tournaments, biathlon training and competition, gun safety, and personal protection classes are among the many that they offer. HB 268 would allow the raisings of funds to further the use of the Tenino Valley Sportsmen's Association's clubhouse and support the efforts of the nationally ranked UAF Nanook's rifle team, who have produced Olympic-level competitors. The Snowtown Ice Classic will also operate and be administered by the Advocates for Victims of Violence. The participants must purchase a ticket and guess the total of snow accumulation in the town. Winners are determined by the closest guess of what the total snow accumulation is. The Advocates for Victims of Violence is a nonprofit organization that is committed to ending domestic violence and sexual assault. Advocates for Victims of Violence provide confidential services to victims and their families and operates a safe shelter for women and their children. A total of 18 communities are directly serviced by the Advocates for Victims of Violence, including Chitna, Galena, McCarthy, and Valdez. HB 268 would allow the raisings of funds to help serve the women and children that stay in the shelter and allow the Advocates for the Victims of Violence to continue to strive and to the end domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse.
Very good. Thank you. Were you going to take us through the sectional on the bill, too, just explaining the different places where you've added in these new classics?
One moment. So Section 1 adds the Big Bull Moose Derbies into the existing list of games of chance and skill that can be permitted by the Department of Revenue. We have Section 2 that adds the Big Bull Moose Derbies to the existing definition of activities for the purpose of AS 05.15.115C, which limits how permittees can contract with operators. Section 3 adds Big Bull Moose Derbies to the existing list of activities that can be licensed under Alaska Statute Chapter 5.15.180B, the Games of Chance and Contest of Skills. Section 4 defines and describes the Big Bull Moose Derby. And then Section 5 adds the Snowtown Ice Classic to be operated and administered by the Advocates for Victims of Violence, Inc.
Great. And then it looks like Section 6 defines what the Big Bull Moose Derby actually is.
Right.
Okay, great. Any questions for the staff, for Teresa, staff for Senator Wilson? Great. Thank you for presenting that to us, Teresa. We have run out of time. I apologize to the people that are online in Fairbanks, Valdez, Anchorage, and the off-net. We will be hearing the bill again. We've heard it presented. So we will have invited testimony at our next available meeting, which I believe is next week sometime. It will be public noticed by this Thursday, and we'll hear invited testimony and public testimony. Our next meeting is Friday, April 4th. We're going to have a focus on Alaska coal and coal technology. So at this time, I will adjourn the meeting. The time is 5 p.m. Thank you.